Welcome to the Destination Rural podcast series. I'm Peter Rutherford. I'm the CEO of the Rural Doctors Association of Australia. And in this episode, I'll be talking to Dr. Nisha Kot, who's a specialist obstetrician gynaecologist providing services at Bacchus Marsh in Victoria. Before I begin talking with Dr. Kot, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land we meet on across Australia as we listen to this podcast series. I'd also like to pay my respects to elders past, present and emerging, and welcome any Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners who may be joining us for this podcast episode. Dr. Nisha Kot, thank you for joining me on our Destination Rural podcast series. Well, we'll jump straight into it. I'm really keen as a specialist or a consultant specialist that's also an international medical graduate, keen to hear a little bit about your story as to what led you to be where you are, the position you've got now, and just a little bit about yourself, and so we can get to know you a little bit more.
Thank you very much for having me on this podcast, Peter. So my story begins in India, where I trained in both my basic medical graduation as well as my ONG training. And I trained in a city-based tertiary hospital there. But because India has this sort of health system where rural health isn't really a possibility or isn't really optimal, all of the sort of complicated cases would come to the city. And even when I was training in India, I thought this doesn't make sense. You know, women, I was doing obs and gynae, obviously. And so women having to, you know, go over to mountain ranges and cross a river on a boat to get to a hospital just for regular care seemed like such a awful thing to have to do. And so that's where the sort of thinking started of how can we do this better? I then moved to the UK, where I did my training all over again. Now, UK is a very nicely contained country. And so even though you might be rural, you're never really that far away from a city. And then I moved to Australia and moved to Melbourne. So in Melbourne, I was, you know, doing what I would normally do, working in a little metropolitan hospital. And an opportunity came up in a small rural hospital in Bacchus Marsh, which is just outside of the metropolitan boundaries of Melbourne. And I thought to myself, how tough can it be to go to a rural hospital? And, you know, I'm up for it. I'll try it out. And so off I went and took on the role of director of obstetrics in this hospital. And I can assure you it has been a steep learning curve of finding out how different it is once you step outside the boundaries of metropolitan cities in Australia.
So when you say different, how is it different?
Different in terms of resourcing, first of all. It was interesting to realize that just in terms of getting care from, say, psychologists, the sort of multidisciplinary team, which is so important to providing holistic care for women when they are pregnant, is so difficult to organize outside of metropolitan Melbourne, whether you're trying to find a psychologist, a psychiatrist, a physician, a surgeon. Any of those sort of specialties are really difficult to find outside of metropolitan Melbourne. And sometimes when we try and, you know, get help from the city, there seems to be still a prejudice, I would call it, of, you know, why can't you deal with this yourself? And you think, actually, we can deal with it, but we need help. And I would need that help no matter where I was. The difference is that if I was in a big city hospital, that help would be around the corner and I could do that very easily. Whereas when I'm in a rural hospital, that help is far away. And so I have to come to someone else to ask for that help.
So, and I was going to ask you about, you know, like we hear a lot about rural generalists and GP obstetricians and things like that. You know, the role of the consultant specialist, because rural people need access to consultant specialists as well. You know, how important is it to have integrated models, but, you know, and that local access to consultant specialists?
I think it's absolutely crucial to providing the sort of care that is provided in city-based settings to rural women. Now, I speak about women because that's what I do, but rural populations in general is what I would say, that we are all Australian taxpayers and we are all funding a health system that is meant to look after us. And so there should not be a difference between the care that we receive, whether we live rurally or whether we live in the city. And I think that integrated care of, you know, having the specialist as well as the rural generalist, as well as the GP, is key to providing the best care possible to the rural women and everybody else living rurally.
And that's, you know, music to our ears, I guess. You know, often we hear consultant specialists maybe not share that they think everyone should just get their care in the city. But I guess picking up on that, though, that what do you think of the training opportunities or the environment that rural provides for training, not just for rural generalists, but also for consultant physicians?
I think rural provides the sort of training opportunities that people struggle to get in the city. So I will talk about things like gynecology. So hysterectomies, for example, in the city hospitals, every trainee is fighting with about 20 other trainees to get access to surgery. Whereas in a rural hospital, a trainee has no one else to compete with. And the consultant that is supervising this trainee is usually a senior consultant who has done plenty of surgery in their lifetime and so is very keen to teach. And so rural hospitals provide great training opportunities. And in my experience, trainees who have been to rural hospitals always have really good things to say about their experience, whether that be generalist training, whether that be specialist training, the opportunities that they are provided with, the sort of complexities that they get to see and deal with, and sometimes deal with independently with remote supervision, something that they might not get when they're in the city, gives them so much more confidence to be able to deal with those same situations when they are independent and when they are consultants and have no choice but to deal with things independently.
I'm particularly interested, you are an international medical graduate, so I'm particularly interested, you know, in relation to how you've been accepted and to be blunt, talking about potential racism issues and things like that. So interested in what your experience has been with the support and engagement or lack thereof, if that's the issue, of your medical colleagues, but also of the broader health workforce and then also your patients.
It would be wrong of me to say that there is no racism or that I have not faced racism ever. What I will say is that racism comes from a place of fear. It comes from a place of not understanding and not recognizing what a person can do or what a person's experience consists of. And once people recognize that actually you do have the right qualifications, the right experience, the right exposure, the right way of looking at things, that overcomes that sort of racism very quickly. What I always say is that there will be a proportion of people who will always be racist, and we cannot change them. All we can do is do the best job that we do and think of it as being patient-centered, being centered towards safety and quality of care that we provide, and put everything else aside. That's not to say that we shouldn't call it out when we face it. We should call it out, because the way to make things change and the way to make people realize what they are saying or what they are doing is actually racism is by calling it out and by explaining it to people. Sometimes I've found that people say things and they don't even realize that what they have said is actually a microaggression, if you like. You know, I've had so many people say to me, oh, you speak very good English. And initially when people said that, I would feel, oh, that's great. You know, people think I speak very good English. It's only after a few years that I thought, hang on, why is that a big deal? You know, yes, I speak very good English. I did all of my education in English. And that kind of change in mindset and pointing it out to people when they say something like that helps educate people. They may not realize that what they're saying is actually being either racist or being aggressive about something. And once they realize it, they might change, because they don't want to be perceived as being of that type.
Yeah. It's really interesting to get your perspective on that. And I think education obviously is a key part, and, you know, doctors educate constantly to their patients. So I think just another facet of that patient education as well. As an international medical graduate, and particularly someone that's come into Australia, and you mentioned your UK experience, you basically had to do all your retraining. So I'm interested in what your experience was in relation to RANSCOG, recognising your qualifications and how your transition from India to the UK and then into Australia, and how your clinical practice was assessed, and what your experience was in getting through the college processes.
So the college has a very clear process whereby you submit all of your previous experience and whether you have done an equivalent training program, what the training program was like, what the assessments were like. And then based on the submission you make and based on your references that you provide, the college then makes a determination whether you would be eligible for an interview. So the first step is submitting all of your paperwork and submitting the evidence to the college. The second step is actually attending an interview. And at the interview, you get asked a range of questions. And these questions are about your experience, about your training program, about when was the most recent cesarean you did, when was the most recent hysterectomy you did, things like that, which you would expect anybody who's doing a generalist ONG role to be doing as part of their day-to-day practice. Once you have done the interview, then the college makes a determination of whether you are comparable with an Australian trainee or not. If you are substantially comparable, which means that you are basically equivalent to an Australian trainee, you would then have a period of supervision. And I think that is really important because you're coming from a completely different background and you need to have some level of support and supervision. That time period of supervision could be anything between 6 months to 12 months. At the end of that, you would then progress to become a fully qualified RANSCOG. The college might make a determination that you're actually only partially comparable. And if you are partially comparable, the college would say then to become completely or substantially comparable, you should do the college exams and also do a few of the modules that gives the college the confidence to say that, yes, we can agree that you can work as an ONG. Once you have done all of that and completed those requirements, you would then sit the exam. And once you have passed the exam, you would get again your RANSCOG. The third option is that the college might decide that you are not comparable at all. And if you have that result, then your option is to enter the ONG training program and start from the beginning and complete the training program like any other Australian trainee. And so those are the sorts of options or those are the determinations that the college might make. Now, generally, if you have done an equivalent training program, the UK program is equivalent to the Australian program, and there are a few others, then the college usually would say that you are substantially comparable, and then you would work in any role in as a 12-month supervised position, and at the end of those 12 months, you would then progress to a RANSCOG. So that has been my journey.
So you do think, though, that it's quite a clear the pathway options are quite clear. And do you think it's a fair assessment and process?
I think it's definitely clear. And, you know, the RANSCOG website gives all of this information very clearly. It is fair because ultimately we have to compare trainees from all over the world with local Australian trainees. And so there has to be some sort of fairness to be able to make that comparison. And I think having that duration of training and the depth of training analyzed is a fair comparison.
I just muted because my dog barked. He may have got in at the end. I'll cut this little bit out. Okay. Nisha, we've talked a lot about your experience in coming in clinically, but I'm interested particularly what your family experience is. You know, do you have a partner, children? Are they living regionally or living in Melbourne? And I mean, we have a lot of specialists that sort of are capital city based, but commute or do more of that fly in, fly out type arrangements. And that's you know, a critically important service, obviously, to many of our rural communities. So, but a lot of our listeners are really keen to understand some of the family dynamics of our rural doctors. So just interested to learn a little bit more about your family dynamic.
So yes, I am one of those fly in, fly out. I'm actually based in Melbourne and my partner is also a doctor and he works at the Peter Mac in Melbourne. And so that's how we are based in Melbourne. Essentially, all of my journey, UK and Australia, has been following him around the world, really. And he, until recently, was also going down to Bendigo to do a clinic. And so both of us have been, you know, based in Melbourne, but supporting rural services and traveling out from Melbourne to support the rural services. I have two children, one of whom has finished school and is at Melbourne Uni, and a younger child who is still at school. I suppose for children, it's easier to get used to a new system because they're much more adaptable than adults. And so my daughter was born in India and we moved to the UK when she was about 2 years old. And then my son was born in the UK and we moved to Australia when he was 2 years old. And so my children consider themselves Aussie.
Good to hear. And I guess with your commitment to rural and that sort of thing, I get how important is, you know, or what's your view of rural generalists, like, and rural generalists with obstetric advanced skills? And this is with respect that it's your personal view, not a college view or anything like that, but it's certainly, you know, we're keen to understand.
Yes. Well, it is definitely the view of the college and my view that having rural generalists with the obstetric practice or with the obstetric interest is key to keeping rural maternity services open. And keeping rural maternity services open is key to keeping a rural service, health service open, and also key to keeping a rural community going. Because once you have a maternity service, you then have a community where you have young people who can move in, young people who are having a family, who are having babies, and they are the people who then bring all of that vibrance to a rural community, bring the jobs to a rural community. And so a maternity unit is basically the beating heart of a rural community, as the college has said, and I completely believe in that. And I think the role of specialists is to be there to support our colleagues who are doing this role of being rural generalists and providing obstetric services, and to support them with kindness and with our expertise, yes, but actually support them to develop the skills that will keep them independent and less need of the specialist is what I see the role of the specialist in the rural community.
So would you recommend rural practice to someone who is considering either a training or a specialist position, you know, within a rural or smaller regional community? Would it be something that you recommend and why?
I would wholeheartedly recommend it. And I know that rural practice is not for everyone, but I would say that even if you don't commit to a lifetime of rural practice, actually having a few years in rural practice will make you a much better clinician. Because when you work in the city and you work in the bells and whistles hospitals, you actually don't sometimes develop those skills of doing everything on your own. And those skills are really, really important. You may not want to do that for the rest of your career. You may not want to do that as something that you would choose to do, but it's really important to have the experience of doing it, because that will always give you the confidence of being able to do it, even when you are in the setting where you can ask for help. When you can ask for help, yes, absolutely ask for help, but put yourself in that uncomfortable position, challenge yourself, because that will make you a much better clinician, a clinician who can then understand the challenges of providing rural healthcare. And so you'll be more supportive of your rural colleagues, even if you don't practice rurally yourself, but equally it will make you a much more confident clinician.
That's excellent to hear. Thank you so much. What I'm going to finish on, though, is a fairly quick fire round of questions. So just say the first thing that pops into your head. You can elaborate a bit if you feel that it needs further explanation, but basically try and answer quick in rapid fire. So, favorite holiday destination?
Victoria. I mean, we're in lockdown, isn't it? There's no choice.
Good point. Good point. Best thing about Australia?
Sunshine. Except Melbourne doesn't have much.
AFL or cricket?
Cricket. I'm an Indian.
Best thing about rural medicine?
People.
Worst thing about rural medicine?
People.
The biggest, probably preconceived idea you had about rural practice in Australia, or misconception you may have had?
That obstetrics was obstetrics no matter where you did it, whether you did it in the city or rural, babies are still born the same way. And I've come to realize that that is not true. I mean, babies are still born the same way, but practicing rurally is a completely different kettle of fish.
Good to know. The best piece of advice that you've received, where, like, for life, for, you know, that's in, sort of informed you, whether it's about your profession or about managing your personal life, best piece of advice you've ever received?
Go for it. It's the best piece of advice I've received. I used to be so reluctant to try out new things, but, you know,